My job's to be brief and sharp. Julia, can I start with you? So your journey has enabled you to see a lot of the world. Now that you arrive into Australia, and particularly South Australia, what would be your observations around the challenges that are facing our space agency at this early time in its journey?
Okay, so I'm going to start about South Australia. So over the last 10 years, I've basically bounced in and out of Melbourne and only been in South Australia the last 3 months. The space community in South Australia is utterly amazing. It is the most inclusive state I've ever known, and everyone wants to help somebody else. And I absolutely love that. I think that's a definite plus for the space agency being here, and I think they'll be able to work very well with that. Some of the challenges, though, are things like universities and what they teach the graduates, I think, needs to change a little. So, yes, while I graduated finished my university studies in 2008, we learned a bit about chemical rocket propulsion in aerospace engineering, and that's pretty much it. That's not going to help a grad start in an engineering job in the space industry. I think they really need a little bit of this is what a spacecraft is, this is what it consists of. You know, you have to interface with a ground station. It's just like when I started my first job at Qantas, I didn't know that there was an auxiliary power unit at the back of the aircraft, so I didn't actually know how the engines got powered in the first place. I found that out in my first job. So I do understand that industry has its place in teaching information, but I think universities also need to change a bit there, and I think the space agency can help with that, but also industry can help with that too. But I think one of the big challenges for the agency in general is getting a sustainable industry here. We have a lot of companies that have come here now, but we still only have so much work. There obviously will be some more to come with $150 million and, you know, the $10 billion or so that defence is going to have, but when is that going to all be announced and all going to happen? So we want many jobs for all of us, and we've just got to figure out exactly how we can do that.
Hey, great start. Thank you. Flavia challenged me to give her the most complex and difficult questions. I'm going to have a shot. Flavia, Megan used this wonderful turn of phrase, we want to run through the legs of giants. We want to run through the legs of giants, which I think is a comment around agility. As you work through the gravity challenge and the wonderful things you're doing there, what is the characteristic of the Australian space sector that you're looking to create or want to be part of creating?
You know, you use the word agility. That is an interesting word in a startup world in general. So it's a word that has been quite incorporated very well in the software revolution. You know, we all know this, like, yeah, we are agile. You know, we got stickers on the walls and posters, and it's great. Software did very well, like the software revolution, the unicorns that have been, your Uber and Uber Eats and Airbnb. This is all agile mentality, okay? I'm a space engineer by background, and engineers are built for perfection during universities. It's the nature of what we are told to do. We are not built for agility. And now I'm a CEO. There is another job, a different job. But when we started Fleet, we tried to teach agility and go fast and understand things and bring in our aerospace engineer together. It was a disaster. I mean, we launched 4 satellites last year in 1.5 years, so that's pretty agile. I don't think it's agile enough. I think you have to launch 100 satellites in 1 year, not 4. So how do you incorporate of that agility? So it's a way of working that we haven't learned yet. It's also a mentality. I always say that space people are always with space people. I think you saw it in one of the presentations. So we go to space forums to talk with space people. And we sit down with space people, talking with space people. And we all know each other, we love each other, and we're all happy to help, that's great. So what? You know, the big agility problem of the space industry, I've been in this industry for my past 10 years, is that we understand that we are serving Earth, and maybe behind Earth. So we are serving someone else that can be industry. We are serving human species. We are serving nature. So we are serving someone else. And that the agility of this industry completely crashes down. We build amazing rockets For what? We have built amazing satellites for what? And you know, Julia has worked for the past 10 years on how to use data. And oh, everyone says they all know how to use data. But no one knows mining. No one knows oil and gas. No one knows agriculture. How many of these space startups have got an agriculture business developer in them? I mean, Megan, I was lucky enough to do this journey with Megan in the past year. She's an amazing human. And she comes from, you know, big responsibility in a mining company where no one cares, you know, about rockets yet. But the point that I'm trying to make, agility there completely crashes down. And many startups tend to fail because they don't understand that we are serving industry as someone else. So potentially we don't even need all those industrial engineers. We need farmers and, you know, and mining engineers in our companies. And that's the change that is going to change everything. So when I was, you know, the Gravity Challenge team asked me to be part of that, well, they brought like this year, and then I'm going to grow 10 of the challenges of the biggest company in the world, and I put them in front of space startups. This is SA Power Network, Sydney Water, Northern Territory. There's no one that knew anything about space. But they have poles coming down and water crashing down. And, you know, they have problem of health in the Northern Territory. They have problem of body, you know, I think also Osmin are here, body of difficulties to find body resources. They don't care how they're going to get their solution done. This is $1 billion problems in our industry. So we are not so agile yet, but it's happening. So in the past 6 months, I'm seeing this. And this is where we're gonna go so well, you know, in the world when we start closing the bridge, and let's stop talking amongst themselves. And you know, they always make fun of me because I never go to any space conference abroad. And they're like, "Oh, why are you at the space forum?" And I end up being at the mining conference. These are my clients. We need to teach them agility, and we need to teach agility to ourselves. So I think this is your opportunity here.
Really important. Thank you. Megan.
Did I answer enough for your challenge question?
No, I've got another one for you, though. So just
go for it.
Don't get too confident. Megan and Vicky. So, talent. What is it about space that is attracting talent? We've got great jobs here in defence, in engineering, in construction, and yet this panel and this room seems to be attracting talent in a way that other sectors aren't. What is it about space at the moment that's creating this buzz and this attraction for talent in your mind?
It's cool.
I'll write that down. Got it.
Look, I think the better people to ask is the young people here. I can tell you that as just a local member of parliament. And we give this instruction to our newer members of parliament to go out there and talk to them at this time of the year to all the kids who are graduating, year seven, middle school, you know, high school. And this is something that's really absolutely exciting. It's electrifying for them. It really is a new area. It's new for them. They wouldn't even know who Neil Armstrong is. So space travel is something that's sort of quite remote from their normal world. Mm. But also they understand communications. They don't necessarily understand necessarily all the applications already in agriculture, for example, but space technology is used obviously in a number of different areas already, and I think that's your point, is making sure that we actually tap into that. But yeah, for young people it's new, and you know, look, they get some big wig on the television telling them that, well, they don't watch television actually, they watch it, you know, that's online, telling them about, you know, you pay in $4 million and you can get a flight, you know, book a flight for space travel. But I'd just simply say that it certainly is new. I mean, obviously, we've got to do all the work to wrap around all the regulation that goes with these things. But, you know, the opportunity for space travel, not always just to the moon or Mars, although that's going to be the really big thing in the next few years because we've got that commitment and sign up. But for them, it's, you know, they're actually going to be using it in a bus. Now, most of you have seen those little things that Qantas give you on your ticket, which have that big long list of liabilities. We don't accept liability for anything. You imagine what's going to be on the back of your space ticket.
I think we have an innate desire to explore. That is there when we're children. We have a little block in Tasmania, and I love taking people to this block and we haven't explored it fully. And we take adults, you know, people who are working busy jobs, etc. And they go, "What's over there?" So we haven't been there yet. And then they suddenly become seven again. And, you know, they're off, and they're off exploring, and it's delightful to see. So I think we have this innate desire, something deep in us to explore, to climb that mountain, to do something that is challenging, and space provides us with that. But there's something else that's happening. Too, we haven't been able to do this in Australia. We haven't had this. So I think this generation realises that this is an opportunity that they want the country to be successful in. And then the third piece is it's actually in our realm now. So as the cost, the sort of thing that Flavia is doing is this cost of putting constellations of satellites to help us connect with sensors here on the ground starts to come down into our realm as it moves from the realm of governments, which it was 40, 50 years ago, was really the realm of governments, as it moves now to the realm of commercial and it moves to this miniaturization and return and reuse, suddenly, you know, a high school kid can develop a, you know, with their colleagues, can develop a satellite, and if we can get it launched, can go up there. That wasn't possible. So I think the door to our younger people feels a lot more open. And then the challenge for us is not just creating those jobs, but I think the real challenge is the training. So we, you know, we can use the attention that space is getting, but we have to go back to look at, in all the states and territories, you know, our TAFE, our high school, how are we going to prepare people for these jobs? I think that challenge is only really just, we're thinking about it. And it's a challenge now that needs to be stepped up, because that's our responsibility to provide that training, as Flavia was saying.
Julia and Megan, what is Australia going to be famous for in 10 years' time in space? Do you have a sense or an instinct for... you'll be in a conference in the US and they say, "Australia, space, yes, it's all about, you're famous for." What do you think that might be?
I know what I'd like it to be. So one of the coolest things I think that's going to happen in space very soon is that a UAV is going to fly on Mars. And then we're also going to have a UAV, which is actually massive, fly on Titan. And that's one of the things that excites me about space is you have to think outside the box. How on earth do you get that thing to fly? What's the atmosphere like? You know, in Mars, you've got to have rotor blades that are three times what they would be here on Earth. I would love to see Australia part of and known to be part of something flying, maybe even beyond the solar system. That'd be pretty cool.
Megan, any thoughts?
Yeah, 10 years almost seems like such a long way away, but... one of the reasons we set the civil space priorities was actually asking that question, how do we focus on the things where we potentially have a competitive advantage, but we also want to be world-leading. So just starting with position, navigation and timing. So we use space to tell where we are. You know, we follow the little blue dot every day almost. But Australia was behind, and we then set up, so Geoscience Australia will give us 10 centimetre accuracy, so half the span of your hand, in all our maritime, all our land and all our airspace. And the rest of the world said, "Oh, that's good, we expected Australia to catch up." But then went one step further and we said, no, in all our capital cities we'll have an additional correction that will give us 3 centimetre accuracy. We will be the first country for our capital cities to have an accuracy that means you can automate trucks, you can do all sorts of things with that level of accuracy. And of course the runners and cyclists are just going to be really happy with that, because that makes a difference. So just on that kind of infrastructure, I think that when we think about anything we're doing in the space agency, we go, how can we catch up and how can we just go a little bit further all in one move? And then you go to the communications. I said we will transform the way we communicate on Earth. We will start to bring lasers down from space to Earth. We'll do that at terabits a second, you know, 400 or 500 times what your next generation phone will be able to do. This is what younger people will have to figure out. What are they going to do with that? How are they going to use that? So the communication piece, this is the country that invented Wi-Fi. If we are not part of this next step in communication, then, you know, we should be. The areas as well that we're starting to pursue, Internet of Things, Australia's already starting to emerge as a leader in Internet of Things, because, exactly as Flavia outlined, our mining industry, our aquaculture industry, our farmers, our dairy farmers, Flavia joined us on the review, and we first met in Tassie, and Flavia says, I'm down here to meet some dairy farmers because I want to sense their farms and, you know, bring it up to space. I said, well, we've got, you know, this session with Tasmania on looking at the cave. Do you want to come? So she came. And I will never forget, well, none of us will forget that first meeting in Tassie. Mm-hmm. It was sort of blew our mind. So these areas, we've got companies here in South Australia looking at novel propulsion. You can't propel a small satellite at the moment, but what if you could put propulsion on a small sat? So we've got companies looking at that sort of thing. We've got quantum computing. So those things, we don't quite lead the world yet, but we could. And these are just some of the areas that I just want to see. I want to see the ideas, but more than anything, this is, I just want to see Australians, you know, get jobs in this area and young kids kind of get jobs. So that's what I want to see in 5 years. In 10 years, I can't even imagine what it's going to be.
Too far away.
10 years.
Got it. Hey, thank you so much. Hey, thank you for the questions. These are coming along really well. Lots of interesting questions. Maybe one for Vicky and Flavia. Thank God, Vicky, you've just polished up on your space law, because there's a couple of good questions here. Is there a role for business in space? How do you imagine these conflicting interests between the commercial business community and the national, if you like, national security interests in space? How do you reconcile those? And do you think there is a role for business in space, for companies in space?
Look, I think they're already there. It's interesting listening to these ladies about where we're going to be in 10 years' time. And for me, the biggest frontier for us is going to be in the world of spying and surveillance, because we're going to have a polar-to-polar capacity at the Whalers Way development. I think South Australia, I expect, will lead the way. I mean, Pine Gap's the sort of last century equivalent of that, and I think we're going to be in it, and big time. But business and enterprise, to me, it's a little bit like, just imagine 600 years ago, and ships are starting to go out on the ocean, and we had to start developing maritime law. Who could go where? Who could have the salvage rights? What happened if you murdered somebody on the high seas? These are all the same things that we have to make in a regulatory way in the next fourth frontier, as I call it.
Mm.
And, you know, our contract law and all these other things will sustain that. But the great thing about this area is, and I think Megan's touched on this, to the extent that historically space has been something that is in the realm of astronauts, exploration, government managing it all. But all our communications law, weather, meteorology, all these industries that are already there, whilst they might be regulated by government and parliamentary process, they're actually invested in and are being done by private enterprise. So everyone out here who makes some widget that goes with something is part of that already.
Mm.
And for me, the most exciting thing about this industry is that governments won't be the actual makers of these things. They will provide a crucible of protection and regulation and data security and all those things, but actually it'll be done by people in this room.
Hmm.
So, yes, business is not only a part of it, it's already there.
So, Flavia, can I make it a little more complex for you? Is there something that business shouldn't be doing or shouldn't be allowed to do in space? Do you see any boundaries?
A lot of people ask about these thousands of satellites that are going up there, and people think that you can shoot them from your garage. Doesn't really work this way, okay? Just really doesn't. So space is regulated, very regulated. Like, I think all the money I raised in the past 4 years, most of them went into regulation of licensing, and because you have to be, you know, a good citizen when you put things in space. However, you know, there was a space startup in Silicon Valley, as usual, all the space startup in Silicon Valley, they break the law to, you know, go ahead. They launched 4 satellites without regulations last year.
Mm.
It happens. You know, when there is momentum, it happens. They should have not gone into space, okay? And they went, and then they raised another $30 million the week after, because that's how Silicon Valley does it. It's normal. And in a sense, it's not too bad, because there are some rules that needs to change. But it has to be done properly. If you look at frequencies and space in space, this is like an international treasure. So every spot in space, it is a treasure. It's like nature. You cannot just go there and grab it if you're not going to save the world or doing something important with it. It doesn't work this way. you know. And there is space debris that is things that I'm very passionate about. There are so many satellites in geostationary that we're kicking out there. We haven't thought this through really in the past 50 years. Just a few days ago, there are some regulations that have changed, and now for constellation satellites, you need to launch a minimum number of satellites to have licensing. Okay, so people like Elon Musk want to launch 7,000 satellites, and it's popping up like 70 at the time. Now regulation has changed. So it's a complicated environment, very regulated. You have to follow the rules. But it's the space out there, like Mars and like Moon, are treasures. I mean, like, we don't ever forget our history. Like, you know, my Italian ancestor, Cristoforo Colombo, talking about explorers, went to look for the Indian and landed in U.S. And it was amazing. It was fantastic. They didn't have GPS. They couldn't call home. It's just amazing to think about it. When people ask me, aren't you not people scared to go to the moon? How? And they got all the communication. They can talk with their kids. It's like, think about Cristoforo Colombo. But we don't have to forget. And I mean, they found tomatoes in U.S. My entire Italian culture would not exist, you know, without tomato. But what happened after Cristoforo Colombo and the amazing exploration? It's exploitation. And we don't have to forget. I mean, if we forget that every single exploration on a human history is followed by exploitation, we haven't studied history. So I think that's going to be complex. Because it's not just Australia or US or NATO countries that are deciding together to go there. There are many countries, you know, that don't have good intentions in general. So Israel did something amazing, and I met the team and Megan as well, called Space IL. They put their first spacecraft on the moon for less than $90 million. And I think it costed more in Hollywood to make the Gravity movie. That is insane. But okay. So, and they were a team of a startup of 30 people. So everyone can do it. Are we going to explore it? I think this is what we have to control.
Fantastic. And Italy without tomatoes is a terrifying thought. Thank you. questions from the floor. Have we got a microphone? And I would love to get a question from the floor. There's one over here. Thank you. Thanks, Jim.
My name's Olivia, and I was just wondering, what is the board's general opinion on private space travel companies like SpaceX, like Blue Falcon? Do you think they have a place in the mission to Mars?
Fantastic question.
Yeah, I think they absolutely do. And, of course, one of the things that SpaceX has been pioneering is the reuse. And we all watched the first time that rocket re-landed back on the launch pad, and then you watched it over and over and over and over and over again. It was just extraordinary. That single step of making what we take to space reusable and has fundamentally shifted the cost position of space. And then SpaceX has a program to go to Mars. NASA has a program to go to Mars, and they're saying, you know, NASA's timetable sort of 2030, 2040. But SpaceX is working on, you know, the sort of rocket, the Big Falcon rocket, looking at the fuel. And for the rocket to go to Mars, they're looking at completely new fuel, a sort of liquid hydrogen fuel. So that could also make breakthroughs for what we do here on Earth. And then you need the capsule, so they're using the Dragon capsule. The Dragon capsule's already docked with the International Space Station. So starting to build the things that we need and looking at it a different way and looking at it from a different cost area. I think SpaceX has done quite a bit. Mm. They often set ambitious timetables, which don't tend to be met, but we're kind of getting used to that. But it helps people really think about it. SpaceX does its deorbit tracking here in Australia from Tasmania. So when a rocket goes back to, on certain trajectories, comes back to land, it enters the atmosphere over Tasmania, and Australia does that. So they're just really good at looking at completely differently, and we need those breakthroughs to bring this cost down. We need those players. You've got Boeing, you've got Airbus, other players in there working to do this in a way we haven't done before. So there's a role, I think, for these companies. And then you look at how SpaceX is now looking to pay for that. So even before we've had governments pay for that, they're saying, no, we're going to put up a constellation of satellites and we're going to provide high-speed communication to the gamers, around the world, because they're the ones who want the best frequency and fidelity of their communication, the best bandwidth. And so a different way of even funding that activity, so using communication. So I think the commercial space has now a very significant role at 75% of the entire market.
Mm. A great question. I'll come back to the floor in a second. And I'll just take one from this fantastic tool that I've got here. We're heading back to the moon. We'll be a permanent settlement. We'll be extracting water. What are our obligations to the moon ecosystem? What constraints are there on how we interact with that ecosystem? Yeah, Megan, if you would be happy to.
Well, Australia's a signatory. I've got the Attorney General next to me. She's going to correct me here. The Australia is a signatory to the Moon Treaty, which allows us to have scientific exploration, but not exploitation or ownership of the Moon or a celestial body. So we can go there, and provided that scientific activity is for the benefit of humankind, then it fits with what we do in the treaty. But already the teams in the United Nations are looking at, well, how do we come to grips with this issue that we might need to refuel on the moon, or we might need to refuel in orbit, and we might need to refuel on Mars if we're going to go there. What is that? Is that now use of the resources? So the legal teams are starting to tackle these very questions. But from Australia's point of view, we are a signatory, and we will honour the treaty and our obligations under that treaty.
Thank you, Megan. Vicky, you're comfortable?
Look, the only thing I'd add, she's absolutely right. Not just the Moon Treaty, we're signatory to lots of treaties, and unfortunately not everyone in the world signed up to them. And that's probably one of the greatest weaknesses of that structure, because not everyone's bound by it. We've got certain rules, for example, if somebody's stranded who's an astronaut, they have to be rescued. It's a bit like marine recovery and rescue. But what do you do if they're not really an astronaut? They're just some add-on that goes up to do the mechanical repairs for something. You know, these are the sorts of legal things we're going to have to sort of work through. But underneath that, we've got very good national laws that deal with all the rules for launching and return of our satellites, because there's, I don't know, something like 4,000, is that right?
There's lots, yeah, more than that.
But there's lots more that have finished, like about 4,000, I think, that have finished their usefulness, and they're sort of just whizzing around out there. So we have to sort of deal with that. Because my job, well, I've got the Crown Solicitor's Office over here, 10 of the geniuses of the legal world. They have to work out who we're going to sue, of course, if it hits the wrong person. But it's still embryonic, and remember that not only have we got non-exploitation clauses at the moment, and we do need to deal with that. Somebody raised with me recently about whether there's a heritage site over the US landing site on the moon, and whether there should be. So, you know, planning law, environmental law, these are all things. But the great thing is, we're pretty much, apart from all that space junk up there, we've pretty much got a pretty clean sheet, and we are mature in our environmental law and our protections in that regard. So I think there's a great chance for us to do it better than we have in other areas, when we so that we do leave, you know, a clean, nothing but our footprint.
Yeah, I'm perhaps not so optimistic in the blank piece, because as a species we litter, and we've already littered the orbits that sit around our own planet, which doesn't give you a lot of heart. And so we really need to look at, as a country coming into this, how do we help? How are we responsible in the areas such as space debris? I mean, this stuff is running around at 28,000 kilometres an hour. So a piece of speck of paint hits you, and we might not even be tracking that speck of paint. It can do damage. Yeah. So as a species, we do need to grow up a little and not make the mistakes that we've been doing here on Earth. But our first foray of littering our own orbits is a disappointment, I would say. So then you go, how do we clean it up? What's Australia's role, and what do we need to do? So we're even thinking about how do we make sure that licences we're providing for assets that are going into space are starting to think about the end of life, making sure they're not debris. So how does Australia act as a responsible citizen? how do we help people clean up what's up there? We've got the first tests of a company out of Canberra that is looking to use a laser to move a piece of space junk. Can we use a stream of photons to move it a little bit so that it doesn't hit something? How can we be part of that solution? But it is quite concerning, I think, already. You might be given your parking spot in space for your satellite. Here's your orbit. We know that orbit is relatively clean, but you've got to get there. Mm. You've got to get through this other material, and we have not covered ourselves in glory as a species.
Interesting. Please.
Thank you. Christine Locker. Megan, perfect segue. My question was exactly environmental. We haven't done a great job here in looking after the environment. And in thinking about extracting 100 tonne of water from the aquifer of the moon, have we really thought about the impact, the environmental impact, beyond the junk that's floating out there? Have we thought about the potential environmental impact of 4,000 satellites and so on out there?
Yeah, well, I think there's two parts of that. One, using space to actually help manage our environment here. So we start to use satellites now for, you know, our weather, for our monitoring of bushfires, for our forestry monitoring, you know, stacking up. So space has, I think, had a tremendous positive impact in how we look at our planet. And going to space, all the astronauts say that view of looking back at the Earth, you know, our blue planet, reminding us that we come from water, spectacular planet, and it makes you kind of want to care for it. There's no boundaries there. So I think space, as we look for water elsewhere, will make us look at our water back here and perhaps treat it with more care. So space has some positives. On the other side, you're right, we need to think about that. So as we go look for water, what are we going to do? How do we interact? If you look at the Mars rovers, for example, some of the heating elements are radioactive on the Mars rovers. And so already there's a surface that we as a species have put radioactive isotopes on the surface of another planet. So we'd need to think through these aspects very, very carefully as to what we do and not just be driven solely by the scientific discovery. Mm.
Julie, can I bring you in? Megan, in her remarks, talked about an interaction she had with her equivalent in the UK where she said, or the equivalent said, Australia's nation is behind your space agency, and that wasn't the case in the UK. With your travels around the globe, Julia, why is that? Why is Australia at this point in time behind our space agency, and that not perhaps the case in some other countries around the world, in your opinion?
I think many countries have had everyone grow up where there is just a space agency. It's normal.
Right.
You know, space is often mentioned on the news. You know, it's not in the UK. It's not just the different colours of cloud. You also get, you know, this satellite has done something today, or, you know, this launch has happened. In the US, when I was there, it was just so commonplace that people worked in space. You could go to multiple other companies and have space jobs, and you could do that all from one city. I think what's really exciting about it here is that because we haven't had that, we've had to try and work together over such a large geographical distance to try and have that happen. You know, I think I actually feel pretty lucky that when the space agency was announced, I think there will be one memory I'll never forget. Right, and I don't think, you know, in many ways all these people working in the US will never have that. Hmm. So, we're just a very inclusive society, and I think Australians also love talking to other Australians when you're overseas.
Hmm.
You know, we all probably find that in our travels too, so we're all pretty friendly. So
Flavia, that suggests that we've got a moment in time where, whilst the space agency is new, eventually it won't be new. Are there things we need to do now to harness that enthusiasm? Are there things that you think we really need to get on with in the short term?
I think momentum is everything in every sector. You know, when you have a period, when things happen, you just have to go for it. And is it for a startup, for a business, for an agency? It's everything. So you can't, we always kind of feel like, oh my God, are we going to miss it? Are we doing enough? Are we going fast enough? It's constant. You know, Megan goes all over the country 3 to 4 times a week thinking, oh my God, it's already 2020. The reality that this is going to be a long journey. Like, this is the rest of our lives. It's the rest of my kids' life. You know, they are 4 and 6. This is where they're going to grow up. So we're not going to miss the train. We don't have to do everything in 1 year. You know, we put out each other goals that are absolutely unrealistic, and we double them every 3 weeks. I don't know what we're thinking we are missing. I don't know what's the feeling, but it's a good feeling. You know, do you understand what I'm saying, Megan? You feel it, right? What do we have to do? From my point of view, we need the biggest growth in space comes in other countries came from government, and we need to be realistic that, as Julia said, this is a massively big country, but with 20-25 million people. So, okay, there is a lot of growth economy, there is a lot of money, there is a lot of collaborations, but how are we going to grow this industry? And I'm a big fan of startups. I think startups are the future, innovation is the future. And, you know, when I came here, I kind of thought that Australia was very innovative, but it's not. And let's just tell us to each other, it's not really, okay? So there is an opportunity. And I think startups grows really fast. Like SpaceX was a startup, and now it likes 10,000 people. Tesla was a startup. You know, Rocket Lab was a startup in New Zealand that builds a rocket and raised $300 million. Let's help these new companies off the ground. Let's connect them to their customers. You know, startups are incredible. You know, you girls can start a startup in 4 years, probably this year. You know, become really rich, maybe. Okay, maybe. Everyone can do it. So I'm a big fan of supporting the startup community. Innovation, I think, is super important. It's just where enthusiasm comes, when the dreams comes, and it's just amazing. I think it's a big part because the government is doing beautifully. The big businesses are doing beautifully. The startup are not there yet. So these are the guys that need your help.
Mm. There's a question.
Yeah, it's Anthony Finn, University of South Australia.
Thank you.
How do we manage the transnational loyalties of the multinational corporations playing in this space?
Well, I'd just say that the same way we deal with them on the ground. There's no question that some of the big multinationals who've got the funding capacity, firstly, to be in this new world. What I'm talking about modern space for us in Australia is actually having it as an industry itself. For a significant time, we've been participatory as a player in enhancing other commercialisation and upgrades of our communications, agriculture, weather, etc. But to have an industry of its own and add-ons of travel and exploration. But we have this situation where big multinational companies have an economy bigger than Australia's. Bigger than South Australia. And so, you know, some of these entities could buy or sell us tomorrow. So we have that challenge now. And obviously it's largely managed by regulation. And one of the things we have is, of course, the capacity at the geographical level on the ground or in the ocean or areas that we have jurisdiction is we've got borders there. This is the big new challenge of space. Is that even though you've gone up there, you've got your blueprint, you've paid the fee, you get your little bit of orbit for satellites, the traversing them, the damage, the ownership, these are all things. If somebody is murdered up there, what jurisdiction do we charge them in? So we've got lots of things to do extra, as I say, but at the commercial level, yes, we've already got multinationals in that space. Pardon the pun.
Thank you. Murder in space, I read that one. The astronaut did it. Question over there.
It's going to be a movie.
Charlotte. Flavia, you talked about history and how as a population we need to remember how Indigenous people have been treated globally. How do we protect the Indigenous microbes on the Mars or the Moon?
Send me there, I'll take care of it. Okay. I don't know. For me, it's an important topic because I agree with Megan. You know, like, we haven't done beautifully for this planet. But you know what? You know, I can't see you very well from here because I don't have big vision, but I think you're quite young. I love millennials, and older generation that comes are kids from 0 to like 35. This is an amazing generation. I mean, this is a generation that is trying to solve, I'm sorry to say that, all the problems that the parents' generation created. Thank you. And they're out there in the streets. They're fighting. They are skipping schools. They are doing it. They are building things to protect the oceans, to clean the oceans, you know, to protect people. I love these generations. They are incredible. And a lot of people think, they are the generation in front of the iPhones. Not really. This is the generation that is doing it. And I'm amazed. And I think my kids will do more. This is the generation that will go to Mars. And the generation of my kids is the generation that will go to Mars. So if you ask me how we're going to protect everything that is there, I think you just educate your kids. Just make sure that they see what's happening out there. I love what young people are doing, their voice and how they're trying to save everything. And if this is the generation go to Mars, I think we'll be okay. So don't forget to show them. Don't forget to bring them with you. Don't forget to do your little things in your daily life, you know, from the plastic to every single thing that you think is not important. That's the generation that's going to be in Mars. So just think this through. It's on us, I think.
Could I just add to the climate aspect? Because I think your question also related to the protection of Indigenous culture. And clearly in Australia, obviously we have certain Indigenous culture, we have native title claim law, and that is on the table for us in dealing with the reforms that we have to look at. Because, you know, just as people have a right to light when they build a building to the next door, there's going to be the question of whether we're going to in some way interfere with or interrupt what is, you know, a thousand-year-old cultural connection. So, yes, that is native title potential claims are also on the files for us.
That's right.
Yeah, one of the things, your question has two layers. One, you were talking about the microbes as well on other celestial bodies and how do we look after what's living there in sort of an Indigenous sense. But going just touching on as well our own Indigenous culture, one of the reasons that we set the logo for the Australian Space Agency is we wanted to embody the sort of 65,000 years of connection with space that is part of our collective history, serve the nation and hence the map of Australia, and then together go forward into a really exciting future. And in the Space Agency, what looks like a lot of dots on the map of Australia, each colour is an Indigenous constellation that has stories connected with around this country. So we wanted to do something very different with our statement to the world on what our logo is. The issue of microbes is really interesting because we haven't found life, but there's no question that a lot of the effort to go to the Mars is with the promise that we will find evidence of life. We know that Mars had an atmosphere. We know there's possibility. We think there's the salty brines. There's a relatively good chance that there will be a discovery at least of evidence of previous life on Mars. That will be a civilization-level discovery. And we will have to come to grips with it ourselves, just in all of our theoretical, philosophical, cultural, religious context of what that actually means. So I think we will have to deal with this on multiple levels. How do we preserve it? How do we understand it? What does it mean for us that we're not the only life that exists? So it's a huge question, so which means we're going to need the philosophers. We're going to need the people who can help us think about these issues. And then you asked about the microbes themselves. We have a very real and practical example. Australia will be the receiving country for the Japanese mission Hayabusa 2, which landed on an asteroid, Ryugu, collected a sample, and we'll bring that sample back to Earth. Now, we are the receiving country. It will land in Woomera. I could only just say that recently because that's now public. And we're doing all the paperwork with Biosecurity Australia. So you have this vision of, you know, foot shirts and khaki, you know, spraying it in. No, we actually want to know if there's microbes. But actually it's brought some real practical things. How do we do this? How do we contain it? If there is life, what do we do? So we're actually grappling with your question in real life. Our regulatory team is working with the Japanese. We need to do our final review. Your question is like very much part of some of the real things we're doing.
We cannot bring a banana from Melbourne to Adelaide on a plane.
I'm with you.
Good reason.
I know how it'll be sold. It'll be like Border Force. They'll put the bag on the thing, the dog will sniff it, it'll be fine.
Yeah, well, it's going to be the best cartoon in the advertisement, yeah. I reckon, that day.
Hey, we're into the last few minutes. Are there any more from the floor? I've got to kill. Oh, you having a second go? Are we going to allow that panel? Are we okay? Oh, there's a gentleman over here. Sorry. Multiple opportunities, I'm sure, to come and engage the panel.
Chris Schott, member of the Space Industry Association of Australia. I just want to make a comment about the success of the international conference we had here in space 2 years ago in this very venue. Since then, I've been to the one that was held. It's held every year somewhere in the world. It was held last year in Bremen in Germany, and a month ago it was held in Washington, D.C., part of the celebration of 50 years of the men on the moon. Two things that I think South Australia should feel very proud of. So many people at that from all over the world who came to Adelaide said it was the best conference that federation has ever held anywhere in the world. And that was said, and secondly, a lot of people said, are you going to bid to have it again in Adelaide in the near future, etc. They also recognise that at the Congress, the Australian government announced the creation of the Australian Space Agency. As a former politician, a former failed Minister for Space Policy 20 years ago in the Keating government, I understand that that Congress and that announcement by the government is the seminal turning point of Australia's role in space for the next number of decades. Started here in Adelaide, SIA overwhelmingly was South Australian driven. We bid and ran it. We were worried that we would lose money. So we got some help from the then state government to underwrite a loss if it occurred. We aimed to try and get 2,000 people here. We got 5,500 turn up. And the other good news I can now say, because it's published in our association's annual account, from an organisation that had $10,000 in the bank, we made a profit after everything of $1,100,000 that's now in the association's account. And every year we provide some of that for competitive grants to small startup space industry in Australia. That is the result of what the success of both the Space Agency had. And then this, Megan Clark has to take more credit than most, if not anybody, and do the review to convince the government to do it and then get it running as she has been. Because I was at the Congress a month ago in Washington. The agency had a stand, and like in Bremen, people flooded to it. It was there, every state was represented, and all the small companies that are Australia turned up and we're there getting all the connections. And again, it is from 10, 15 years ago when it was an absolute blank void about Australia in space. The difference is chalk and cheese. And I just want to say to the members of the Space Industry Association, those who have had the guts and the courage to bid, thank you. And to Megan and the establishment of the agency, the world in Australia in space is now exceedingly different, and I'm delighted it's overwhelmingly be run out of South Australia.
Thank you.